are ready, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
May it please the court, I am Sarah Martin. I represent the appellant, Jennifer Baldwin. This court reversed Ms. Baldwin's sentence in 2022 because the district court relied on improper factors to support an upward durational departure. On remand, the district court imposed the same sentence of 255 months, but based the departure on different factors. The presumptive sentence is presumed appropriate for every case, and court should only depart in a small number of cases where the defendant's conduct is substantially more serious than typical for the commission of that crime. Here, the district court relied on two factors to depart. Ms. Baldwin was a caregiver at the time of the assault, and Ms. Baldwin did not immediately call 911. Ms. Baldwin asks this court to reverse her sentence because the court again relied on improper factors to depart. The court erred by relying on the fact that Ms. Baldwin was a caregiver at the time of the incident because the jury did not find that Ms. Baldwin abused her position as a caregiver. The law is clear that the jury must find the state proved beyond a reasonable doubt every fact necessary to support an aggravated sentence.
Why wasn't the guilty verdict on the underlying murder basically an implicit finding that the position of trust was abused?
Your Honor, that may be, but the jury didn't find it. And again, Blakely makes very clear that any fact supporting an aggravated sentence must be found by the jury. It is not enough to have an element of the offense, for example, proven implicitly. The jury needs to find that element. The jury did not find in this case that Ms. Baldwin abused her position of trust.
What? Is that?
I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead.
But the jury did find that that she was a caregiver, though.
That's correct.
And so that's a finding of fact. And then the district court needs to explain why that finding creates a substantial and compelling reason to depart then, right?
I would disagree with that, Your Honor. And the reason is the Minnesota Supreme Court's decision in Rourke. Rourke makes clear the distinction between factors and reasons for departure. And that's precisely what this court did in Vann, which was decided about a year after Rourke, and made note of the fact that there is a distinction between factors and reasons. Reasons are the reasons listed in the Minnesota sentencing guidelines. And in Rourke, the question was whether particular cruelty was a fact that needed to be presented to the jury or whether it was a reason that supported. And the Minnesota Supreme Court made clear that the departure reasons stated in the guidelines are reasons that explain why additional facts amount to a substantial and compelling circumstance to justify a departure. So particular cruelty, which is listed in the sentencing guidelines, is a reason and not a factor. Factors need to be proved.
So, for example, on particular cruelty in this case, it would be the failure to call 911 would be the reason found by, no, the factor found by the jury, and particular cruelty would be the reason.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So, again, getting back to my, the jury found that your client committed murder in the second degree, and then the jury found that she was a caregiver at the time of the assault. Aren't those the factors, and then the reason the district court would say is that she abused that position of trust?
No, Your Honor, and again, the reason gets back to the distinction between factors and reason stated in Rourke, and the Minnesota Supreme Court makes clear that the reasons are things listed in the Minnesota sentencing guidelines. Position of a caregiver, or even abusive position of a caregiver, is not a reason stated in the guidelines. So abuse of position of a caregiver is a fact that needs to be proved.
But abuse of a position of authority is a reason, correct?
It is not listed as a reason. It is listed as a factor under major economic offense. And so,
but there's case law that has said abuse of authority is a reason to depart.
There are cases that acknowledge that abuse of a position of authority or abuse of a caregiving position is a factor that allows the court to depart.
So isn't that a reason?
Not under Rourke, Your Honor. Under Rourke, the Minnesota Supreme Court said the reasons are the things stated in the Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines.
But that list is not exclusive.
That's correct. The list is not exclusive. But things that are not on that list need to be proven or presented to a jury. So there are trying to think of a different way of saying it. Essentially, the finding, the reasons are essentially proxies for what makes it more substantially more serious. And actually, if you look at subdivision 4 under the sentencing guidelines for major economic offense, the reason is major economic offense. And then there's 5 factors underneath that. Those factors need to be proven, and one of those is abuse of position of trust.
So what fact-finding is absent here that prevented, that should have precluded the district court from finding that there was a reason to depart?
Precisely the same issue that was in Vann, that this court addressed in Vann, that the court or the jury only found that the person was in a position as a caregiver and did not abuse that position as a caregiver. The brief delay in calling 911 was also an improper factor to justify.
Before you go to that, I just want to try to get a little more clarification because I'm not sure. So the district court, are you challenging the district court's legal determination that abuse of a position of authority is not a reason to depart?
I would agree that abuse of position authority, if that is what the jury had found, would be a valid departure factor. And then the court would take that factor and decide whether based upon that factor, the offense was substantially more serious than the typical murder.
Okay, I'm still a little confused because mm-hmm. I didn't read your brief to differentiate between to state that an abuse of a position of authority is not a reason. I thought you were just challenging the lack of findings by the jury.
That's correct. I would agree that abuse of a position of authority is a valid departure factor.
Okay, sorry to be so
nitpicky. No, that's okay.
So is a factor the same as a reason to depart?
No.
What about particular cruelty? Is that a factor?
No, that's a reason.
That's a reason. Okay.
Yes, and that is the distinction that the court made in Rourke, and that is the basis for the Vann decision from this court that made a distinction between finding a position of authority and abuse of a position of authority. And because the jury in Vann did not find an abuse of position of authority, it was not a valid departure factor.
What was the factor there then?
The factor there was position of authority, very similar to position as a caregiver in this case. And the problem was that they didn't find an abuse.
That a factor?
Correct.
A factor of what? Of what reason?
Well, that's a good question. So it's I guess the insufficient finding is the fact that the jury didn't find the abuse.
Okay. So, but what is the reason? Let's assume for the sake of argument that. Well, there's case law that says abuse of a position of authority is a sufficient reason to depart. Is that correct?
I don't, if there are cases that say it, I don't think they're using reason as the technical term like the court did in Rourke. Rourke distinguishes between the reasons stated in the Minnesota sentencing guidelines and factors.
Okay, what about like the Beard case then? Because Beard case seems to be a very similar case where there was a finding and determination that the person, the caregiver there, did abuse their position of authority. Trust.
In Beard, the basis for the departure, and to be clear, this is a pre-Blakely case, was a violation of a position of trust and the absolute vulnerability of the victim.
Okay.
So it's a violation or an abuse of the position.
And that's the reason.
That is the factor relied on that makes the case substantially more serious than the typical offense.
What would be the reason in that case?
The reason would be that it's substantially more serious than the typical offense. And then the other reasons, the non-exclusive list of reasons stated in the guidelines, are essentially explain why something is substantially more serious than the typical. For example, the particular cruelty factor. The brief delay in calling 911 was improper as well. Case law has explained that failure to render aid is a fact that can support a finding that an offense was committed in a particularly cruel manner. But the cases where the factor of failure to render aid was a proper aggravating factor are nothing like this case. Tucker makes clear that failure to render aid is only an aggravating factor when there is something about the defendant's acts that make the offense substantially more serious than the typical murder. In the typical murder, Tucker noted, the perpetrator does not render aid. The perpetrator does not call 911. In Tucker, it was a case that involved a person running down another driver and then shooting that driver. The defendant then flees the scene and calls 911 to report his pistol is missing. And the Supreme Court made clear that there was nothing about Tucker's failure to render aid that rendered it more serious than the typical murder. The state argues that failure to call 911 immediately is a valid departure factor, but there's a few problems with that argument. The state says that this is a case where every second counted, and there's really no evidence in the record to suggest that the delay had an impact. But even if it did, even if the delay made a difference in the survival chances, that is already accounted for in the fact that this is a murder charge. It's not an assault charge. And it doesn't make this case more serious than the typical murder, just like in Tucker. In the typical murder, the perpetrator does not call 911 or render aid. The law is clear that the factor is only appropriate if there is some evidence that the failure to render aid prolonged the suffering, like in Turrubiates or in Stumm. But it's not like those cases are not like this case. In this case, there was a brief delay. In those cases, there were lengthy delays combined with actively concealing the crime that made it impossible for others to render care. At most in this case, Ms. Baldwin was not as effective as she could have been at rendering care. Maybe it would have been better to call 911 before calling a parent, but that is not something that renders this case substantially more serious than the typical second-degree murder. Just like in Tucker, the court acknowledged that in the typical case that doesn't happen. The district court made errors of law and abused its discretion by imposing an upward departure, and Ms. Baldwin asks this court to reverse her sentence.
Thank you. Counsel for respondent.
May it please the court, counsel, pardon me. Your Honors, my name is Brittany Lawan, and I'm a senior assistant Hennepin County attorney appearing on behalf of the state. Counsel just said that at most, Ms. Baldwin was ineffective as she could have been in obtaining emergency assistance. She was ineffective because it benefited her. She is the person who caused these injuries. She didn't call 911 for 7 minutes. She called the mom, she called the dad, both of whom told her to call 911, and then she called 911. The state would submit that alone is enough of a reason for an upward departure in this case. We're not even...
On what basis?
On the basis that that is a failure to render aid immediately. The district court asked the jury, gave the jury the jury instructions with the additional Blakely findings, and they found that she did not call 911 immediately. I recognize that Tucker says that it had not yet been recognized alone as a reason, but that doesn't mean it can't be. Additionally,
I think Tucker does make it pretty clear you can't rely on that alone, though. It has to be in conjunction with another factor.
But I think we do have that other factor then here.
Which is?
Which would be the fact that she's a position of a caregiver. And so she's supposed to be the one rendering aid to him at all times.
Isn't that usually tied to particular cruelty, though?
It can be, but I don't think that you have to look at them in isolation. I think if you look at 244.10, I think it's subdivision 12, like the statute that discusses the factors and how you can look at them together, I think that that justifies it here. And the district court was explicit that when she initially sentenced Ms. Baldwin, she did not consider these two factors.
Did the district court consider failure to render aid with the caregiver? I thought the district court tied that to particular cruelty.
I read her, and I believe I quote her, Judge Anderson, in my brief on page 9. Oh, excuse me, that's the first sentencing. I believe I quote her on page 12 and 13 of the brief, talking about how she says, it's prudent to also note for the record that there is another aggravating factor. The jury also found that the state proved beyond a reasonable doubt that you failed to call 911 immediately after assaulting CS. The evidence is clear. Your first call was to his mother. When his mother told you to call 911, you didn't do that right away. You made a call to his father. Minutes lapsed, 7. And she talks about how every second mattered in failing to call 911 when the symptoms had been exhibited amounted to particular cruelty as an aggravating factor.
Right. That seems to be tied to particular cruelty then.
I think that's justified here.
But particular cruelty requires a gratuitous infliction of pain and suffering and cruelty. And that's usually not associated with the crime in question. So where is that factor being supported?
The fact that it's usually not associated with the crime in question, I think, doesn't preclude it from being associated here. This is a case where a child was fine, and then he's placed in the care of Miss Baldwin, and then he is not fine. And it's immediately apparent to everyone that sees him. And instead of getting him help, which might have saved his life, which would have led to perhaps an attempted, I guess it's not attempt because it's unintentional, but instead of doing that, she restricted the ability for them to get there right away.
Let me rephrase it. Where's the finding by the jury on particular cruelty?
The jury doesn't have to make the finding of particular cruelty, Your Honor. The jury makes the finding for the reason, and then the district court applies it. I also disagree with how counsel has discussed Rourke. I think if you look at it, the district court submits questions to the jury for additional fact findings as to whether there are circumstances that the district court then considers and determines if those circumstances are substantial and compelling enough to make this a case in which there is a departure. And I think that the reasons, the factors, whatever you want to call it, she did not call 911 for 7 minutes. When the authorities came, she did not tell them what had transpired beforehand. She, similar to Tram, I'm going to get the name wrong, excuse me, on page 22 of my brief, Turbitz, where the defendant pleads guilty to second-degree felony murder with the same underlying felony of child endangerment in the death of a 19-month-old.
But there you had a 45-minute delay and questioning by a parent. I mean, I just see the facts as being very different. And I don't know, where can you point us in the record to any evidence that would say the 7-minute delay caused additional suffering or impacted the ultimate outcome, which was the tragic death of this child?
I think there was testimony, Your Honor, with regard to that question. I don't think that there's a statement specifically in the record that I could point you to that says 6 minutes would have saved his life, 5 minutes would have saved his life. I don't think that I have that statement in the record. But what there is testimony to is that he would have exhibited signs immediately, and it would have been apparent that there was something wrong. And the not calling 911 at that point leads to a delay in getting treatment for that. even if this court were not to agree with the finding with regard to the failure to render aid by calling 911, I don't think that there is a problem with the finding from the district court that her status as a caregiver is sufficient to depart in this instance.
I want to follow up on a question that I had with
sure.
Appellant's counsel on this. And you touched on it a little bit in terms of the clarification between a finding and a reason or factor. Can you just talk about that a little bit?
Yes, Your Honor. I read Rourke it does use different language for it, but if you look at Rourke, initially they're talking about, on page 16 of my brief to 17, I talk a little bit, I quote to a block quote, talking about how the requirements for an upward sentencing departure, one, a factual finding that there exists one or more circumstances not reflected in the guilty verdict or guilty plea, and two, an explanation by the district court as to why those circumstances create a substantial and compelling reason to impose a sentence outside the range on the grid. Here, the circumstances were that she was a caregiver. There was nothing in the verdict of guilt that required a finding that she was a caregiver. The jury found that she was a caregiver when she assaulted him. So that is the circumstance, and the district court then extrapolates on that and explains that that makes it substantial and compelling. And so I think that's met here.
But now, Appellant's counsel suggested that that's a great argument, but we don't have a finding by the jury that that the appellant abused that position as a caregiver, and that's a necessary underlying finding before the district court can rely on the position of trust or authority departure ground.
I would point this court to the fact that Vann is non-precedential, so I don't think that this court is bound by that in the sense that you have to have an explicit finding that the caregiver abuse that position of authority. I agree with Your Honor's first question that isn't that implied and inferred from the fact that the child died under this individual's care? If you also look at the wording of the question to the jury, I think that also answers the question. And I'll quote it to you. The Blakely findings are on transcript pages 1695 to 97, index 87 and index 93, page 8 of my brief. The question is, appellant was CS's caregiver at the time of the assault. It's not just CS's caregiver. At the time of the assault. And six, appellant failed to call 911 immediately after assaulting CS. I think it would, there should not be a requirement that you have to then have, in assaulting someone, they violated that position of trust. I don't think you need to go that far. I think the district court can use its rationale from the finding that she was his caregiver at the time of the assault. In light of the evidence in this case, I believe the district court was justified in imposing a 75-month upward departure. We're not talking about a double upward. We're not talking about more than that. It's 75 months from the top of the box. The standard, as this court is well aware, is an abuse of discretion, and I think that Judge Jamie Anderson did a very nice job of explaining her reasoning on remand and explaining that that is why she felt it was necessary. Unless there are further questions, the state would rest on its brief and ask that you affirm the district court sentence in this matter. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. The only point that I want to make is that this court in Vann had a very well-reasoned decision. This court looked at the Rourke case and drew a distinction, just like the Supreme Court did in Rourke, and came to the conclusion that the jury must find an abuse of a position of authority. Unless the court has further instructions or questions.
Don't see any additional questions. Thank you both for your helpful arguments this morning and briefing. We appreciate it. We'll take the matter under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory 9 days.